Hello and welcome in to episode number 27 of the Calcio Connection podcast, connecting with you, Italian football fans from all over the world. We have some positive news on Serie A potentially resuming. A little bit later in this episode, we're going to take a deep dive on Hellas Verona, a team we've not really covered yet on this pod, so I'm looking forward to that. Going to be joined by Rick Huff, who lives in Verona, runs a really good blog, Notes from Verona, where he talks not only about the football, but about the culture experience of living, you know, in that area of Italy as well. So he does really good stuff. I am Alex Dono, joined as always by my co-host Jerry Mancini. And Jerry, we're recording this on Thursday, and today happens to be Thursday, May 18th, the 20th anniversary of Lazio's 2000 Scudetto. So Jerry, how are you celebrating today, sir?
I got my grappa shots already, my vino, you name it. I've already expressed myself over Twitter, so I will not say it again. But I'm excited, and it's been a long time, and I felt that had this whole COVID never happened, destiny was in Lazio's hands, and I really felt that they were going to win the Scudetto. Who knows what's going to happen if and when the season resumes, and we will get into that, but it's something that it's the second Scudetto they've ever won in their team history, one that I was able to remember and was able to watch. Such a great team that year, and yeah, it was good. And along with that, I was listening to Red Card Report Card today, actually. And I just, before we start, I want to just give a shout out to Joe Cappuccino. Go fuck yourself, buddy, because I heard your comment. all jokes.
What
all
did
jokes,
he say? Please. I haven't heard it yet.
Oh, he said, happy that everyone gave questions but Jerry.
Oh,
he's giving him a little cheap shot. I see. I see that the Calcio Connection is going to have a little rivalry with Red Card. Don't worry, Rui, you're still okay. Aside from the fact that you're a Milan fan, but don't worry, you need a miracle. That's all I remember. Just remember shots, I said that.
Shots have been fired. We're now officially feuding with the Red Card Report Card. I love that. And you know, on Lazio, if Lazio is able to win their third Scudetto over the next couple of months, it could end up kind of looking a lot like the last time they won it, because, you know, 20 years ago, Lazio wins the Scudetto after a tight race with Juventus. They secured it on the final day with a win over Regina, and Juventus, a loss to Perugia on that final match day, was what locked it up. So much like back then, a very close race at this moment between Lazio and Juve. Juve is 1 point ahead. And you know, I still have not completely counted out my Inter, which could be, you know, if they could win their game in hand. I don't know when the hell they're going to play that, by the way, because they're really going to rush the rest of the schedule. But Inter could be 6 points behind Juve, 5 points behind Lazio with their game in hand. But it could end up, Jerry, being a tight race to the finish between Lazio and Juve, much like it was 20 years ago. And we've got some good news these last couple of days. I'm not going to go out and say it's great news, because there still are some hurdles to clear. But Serie A, after a Wednesday teleconference, is now aiming for a June 13th return. So all signs are pointing to Calcio resuming June 13th to finish up the Serie A season in August. I think they'd be resuming the Coppa Italia, which still has a few matches left, two semifinal legs, and you know, Coppa Italia final could resume in July. So that's the plan right now, according to the Associated Press. All 20 clubs have agreed upon that. But like anything in Italy, I'm not going to say it's a done deal, because you still have to deal with bureaucracy. You still have to deal with the Italian government, and you still need to get the government to agree with your health and safety protocols. And that's one thing, Jerry, I'm a little bit concerned about, because you still, even if you do resume the season, with the way the safety protocols are being looked at right now, like the season could resume June 13th, and then June 16th, some player in the league tests positive for corona, and then everyone who's come into contact with that person is quarantined, and the league will close up again. So they may restart this and not necessarily finish it. So I don't know. Like how I certainly am more optimistic now than I was a couple of days ago that we're going to see more Calcio. But should we be all out celebrating, Jerry, or should we still be a little bit cautiously optimistic?
I still be cautious just for the fact that I'm 100% convinced that it's coming back. June 13 will be the date. The question now will be when it still has to be signed off. But the only thing I'm curious is, are they somehow going to be able to agree both sides where if someone gets in contact, it will only be the player that will be quarantined? And I think that's what the owners are trying to work out with the government there, and basically just in general, all parties are trying to be on the same page. And I get that Vincenzo Spadafora wants, if one player gets infected, the whole team gets quarantined. But for me, it's hard because how's that even possible? You know what I mean? Like, I'm suggesting maybe one game at max they're going to be playing, right? So at the end of the day, I just don't know what to expect. But it's something that has a lot of question marks. And at this point, I'm suggesting, just to end this, because I'm repeating myself, we're going to have the first weekend for real. That is 100%. And then after that, we'll see what they go from there and if anything comes bigger than anything else. But I'm hoping that they agree that one player getting infected, they have to be just individually self-quarantined. If you quarantine the whole team, there's no point of even starting up the season again because they ain't going to last long.
Yeah, I agree. Something else that happened on the same day that the June 13th return date was announced, it's also been confirmed that Serie A clubs can resume group training on May 18th, which is, you know, a few days after we record this. I think since May 4th, most of the players have been back with their teams, but they've had to adhere by social distancing guidelines. So it's been individual drills, not, you know, no scrimmages, no training in close quarters. So it's not really been full training, but full training can resume May 18th. And now I think this kind of goes hand in hand with something that's been going on for the last couple of months. I would say the club and the owner, the president, that's been most vocal about wanting to restart things has been Lazio, Jerry's club, and Claudio Lotito, the owner of that club, has been very vocal about wanting to restart the campaign, and it looks like he's going to get his wish. But his club has been accused of something that allegedly, I don't know if I believe this or not, but allegedly, Lazio has been allowing players to train in groups of three and having 3-versus-3 matches, which is not adhering to the rules. And if it is true, and if it can be proven, I guess some penalty would have to come down because they would be breaking social distancing rules and getting an unfair advantage on the other clubs. Have you come across that report, Jerry, and do you think it's bullshit or do you think it's for real?
I think it's bullshit. I think the whole thing is bullshit. You have Claudio Lotito that really wants this season to progress and has been one of the most vocal presidents in all of Serie A to basically get the season going. And then you have this bullshit report, and I read the report, and the photograph they use is an old one. So they're not even using a photograph that is even accurate. It's just some rather just photograph that is just from the past, and it's not even an accurate assumption here that they have. So these are just hearsay, and there's no actual like proof that they have actually practiced 3-on-3. And Inzaghi yesterday also was talking about how hard it's going to be for the club to compete against Juventus for the Scudetto because of the obstacles that they'll have to go through. And I think that Inzaghi is one that is not going to have like 3-on-3. I think he knows better than to put his players at risk. And I'm sure that their own players, that his own players don't want to be at risk until Monday, until they got the confirmation that, okay, now you can start doing what you have to do. So for me, I just think that this is all false news, in my opinion. I think that I know that Lazio in the past has had some criticism for doing certain things, but in this situation here, I don't think they would put themselves in jeopardy, and I especially don't think they would put the season in jeopardy in any way that can help the committee, anybody specifically, to cancel the season?
I mean, my take on it is this. It certainly seems a bit like a flaky report. It might be true, but even if it is true, I don't think anything comes out of this, Jerry. Like, I think it's way too hard to prove it at this point. Like, you would essentially need, because these training sessions, like, I don't know who the whistleblower is, but these training sessions are, you know, being done privately. There's no media there. There's no fans there. So I don't know if somebody from inside the club leaked it, then it's going to be very hard to corroborate that report, because I don't think anyone else inside the club would throw the club under the bus and say, yeah, this is true, we need to be punished for it. So I don't think anything comes out of this. I think that this report is probably where this story ends. And furthermore, honestly, I think there's a, I hate to say it because I sound very cynical and very negative, but I think there's a pretty good chance that if Lazio has done this, they're not the only team that's done this, because I think everybody is going to try, especially after you've had 2 months away from the game and your players are not in optimal form and not in optimal physical condition. I think anyone is probably trying to look for any advantage or any edge possible before group training is allowed. And I say that because, yeah, I've covered the NFL for a lot of years, okay? And the NFL has very, in college football too, for that matter, American football, they have very, very strict rules in the United States because, you know, people worry about concussions and CTE. So there are a lot of regulations in place as to how often you're allowed to put your pads on and actually hit and tackle each other in practice. There are very strict guidelines. You're only allowed to do that for a certain number of hours or minutes per week, and the other hours and minutes per week, you're only allowed to be basically in pajamas playing two-hand tag football with no contact. So what do you think happens? The majority of the NFL teams try and bend those rules and do more contact than allowed, because they're trying to get an edge. Like, it's just human nature. When you talk about millions of dollars, or in this case, millions of euros at stake, clubs will try and bend the rules as much as they possibly can without getting in trouble or getting punished. So I don't know for a fact whether or not Lazio is actually guilty of this, but I think they could be. And even if they are, I don't think they get punished for it. And I think they may not be the only ones doing this. And I hate to say it, because, you know, we're talking about a worldwide pandemic where these rules are in place, you know, for a reason, not only to protect these players, but to protect other people. So I hope no one's breaking these rules, but it honestly wouldn't surprise me if some are. So I hate to say it, but no, I don't think Lazio is going to get in trouble for this. Some other things going on, Jerry. This is a follow-up to a story we were talking about in our previous episode. Juventus midfielder who's had a pretty disappointing first season with the club, and it might be his last, Adrian Rabiot, according to Nicolo Schira, transfer and cultural reporter, he could leave Juventus in the next months. His mother and agent, Veronique, has talked with Newcastle and Everton. So this could be the swan song for Adrian Rabiot. Like, Jerry, do you think any Juventino is going to be upset if that guy leaves this summer? I think they'd probably say, don't let the door hit you on the way out.
No, fuck this guy. After his bullshit rants this week and complaining about £7 million of being lost, or I forgot exactly what we were discussing about the other day, but he discussed about not being paid. Oh, taking a pay cut. That's right.
Yeah.
And he was so pissed off after that. That just tells you the persona, the type of person you are. Your character is, you're selfish. You care about yourself. You don't care about your team. You're not willing to take sacrifices in a crisis right now and to help your club. And everyone else is willing to help the club, because it's not about the owner making money. It's about the club being able to be financially well and be able to pay those other people within the club who are not part of the starting 11 or on the bench, any of the players. So there's other people to take into consideration that don't even make nearly as much as what these players make. So I think he's just selfish. He does not care about anyone but himself. And for anybody who decides to take this player, good luck, because you're going to get many headaches. And I think a lot of the time last season, I think that Thomas Tuchel, if I'm not wrong here, if I'm wrong, right or wrong, he was under a lot of criticism at times. Why isn't Rabiot in the lineup? Why isn't he starting? And now you're seeing why PSG didn't insert him into the lineup, because A, he wasn't happy for various reasons. B, his mother is his agent, and quite frankly, she seems like a piece of shit to me, because because she ain't handling things properly here, nor with PSG. And it seems as if Rabiot is getting the shit out of the stick twice now. Two good quality clubs, winning clubs. He has the ability to be coached under some decent managers. Tuchel, to me, I think is a really good manager. I have no problems with Sarri as well. Now you're going to go to Newcastle or Everton, and who knows the direction Newcastle is going to go into. You can buy a bunch of really good players. Doesn't always necessarily pan out. Who knows what kind of environment's going to be, different personalities. And you got Everton, Ancelotti. Ancelotti will put this guy in the doghouse. I don't even think he'll last with Ancelotti for more than a season, personally. So I think that this guy is peaked already before he even can hit his strides.
Yeah, no, fair enough. There's a few interesting notes on Inter over the last couple of days. I'll start with the latest on Lautaro Martinez. A Spanish report now says that Inter has accepted the idea that Lautaro is going to leave, that he wants to go to Barcelona. So now Inter's prerogative is to try and close the deal as quickly as possible, because I guess they feel like the longer this drags on, the more difficult it's going to be to kind of map out the replacement and move past Lautaro. Again, this is coming from a Spanish report, so that may have been kind of strategically reported from Barcelona's side to really try and pressure Inter to do it quickly. It's hard to really know what's true and what's not when you're talking transfers, you know, with a worldwide pandemic and, you know, teams don't really know how much money they can spend or not. But I don't know. Maybe, Jerry, if you can put yourself in my shoes, if I look at this from the perspective of an Interista, which I am, if I can accept the idea that there's a much better chance than not that Lautaro is leaving, I kind of would like to sort of put it past us as quickly as possible and say, okay, here's the deal we've agreed to. If it's, you know, 70, 80 million plus two players, you know, maybe a fullback and Arturo Vidal coming over, that as long as they get good value for a player who is, you know, thought to be worth 111 million euros, that's his release clause, as long as they're getting a fair return with the valuation and have enough time to plan out getting a replacement at this point, I'd rather do this deal quickly than wait until the final days of the transfer window to get it done.
Oh, no, for sure. And I just don't know if Barcelona has that kind of money to spend on Lautaro. 111 million is a lot of money. And I don't know how they're going to do it, if they're able to sell players to gain any money to buy him. And like you said, Lautaro is convinced that he only wants to go to Barcelona. So is Inter forced now to make a sale and take a loss, or do they say, screw you, if we can't come to an agreement, we keep you for another year and you'll have to wait until things get better economically? Like, I don't know what the length of Lautaro Martinez's contract is, how many more years he has left with
the
club.
I think he's got at least two more years. I think he signed a four-year deal. He's in the second year of that, so I think he's got two more years left.
So is there any reason to panic to sell him right now? Like, is it
no?
Here's the question: will he be discouraged, or will he be mad that he wasn't sold to Barcelona? If Inter were to just keep him and throw everything off the table, do you think you would have a happy Lautaro Martinez still playing with Inter, even though he wasn't sold? Or is the striker convinced that he has to be sold with Barcelona for next season and he has to play with Messi? Like, those are things that we don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious to know if he is okay not being sold, and he's just happy with the idea that is out there that, okay, we got a Barcelona team that has really idolized and really flourished the play of Martinez this season, the way he's growing, and someone who can really fill that number nine for seasons to come. Is it in his head that, okay, I need to go to Barcelona? Because he's already said that he wants to go there, and he's prioritizing Barca, but how much is he prioritizing them? Is he respecting Inter Milan and the fact that, okay, I still have Antonio Conte as my manager. I can really learn a lot under him. So these are the things that we don't look at. We just hear what the media is reporting. I'm just curious to know what the player, the individual, out of everything, really feels. And if the team doesn't get what they want and they can wait it out, I don't see why you have to rush to sell him. Keep him for another year. You know he's going to get better. He's really developed a good chemistry with Lukaku. The two have been really, really good this season. I'd probably say the best dual pair in Serie A, and maybe top three of all football, maybe. I could be wrong about that. That just comes to the top of my head right now. But it's just I don't know. What would you do, Alex? Like, do you sell him, or do you? I think those are the two questions you got to ask. Are you happy to be here for another year? And B, if and is Barcelona like the main objective for you? And if not, then yeah. You go, okay, we don't need to sell you right now. If Barcelona ain't able to sell what they have to, and whatever it is that they need to do to earn that money, or just to make that money, or have it to buy Lautaro, I see you wait until things get better.
Yeah, no, exactly what you're saying is the approach that I would take. Inter does not have any pressing financial need where they have to sell him. Like, this is, you know, it's not like we've talked about Brescia reportedly needing to sell Sandro Tonali because they need the profits. Like, in order to stay afloat, they need to make that plus Valenza from selling him. Like, that's not the case with Inter. Inter is perfectly happy to keep him. The only reason why they would sell him is if he really wants to go. It looks like he does want to go to Barca, and I think a big part of that is Barca is willing to offer him a substantial raise in wages, you know, higher than anything Inter would be capable to match. I think the Messi aspect is also big. I think he would like to play with his childhood idol and, you know, the hero of Argentinian football. I think that's part of it. But I think there's still a sense of calm with Inter's management because, at least as of now, this is definitely not a situation where Lautaro is trying to play hardball and really holding the club hostage to try and get sold. Like, he seems to be in a situation, and this could change, right? But as of right now, he seems to be in a situation with he's perfectly happy staying at Inter another year, letting the situation play out, but Barca is where he would like to go. So he's not desperately trying to jog out the door or sprint out the door and really give Inter a hard time. So I think it's put Inter in a nice position where, you know, they don't have to sell him for any financial reason, and he's not giving them a hard time about selling him, at least not yet. So I think they're in a spot where they can kind of kick their feet up and say, okay, if you want to buy him, that's fine. We put a price tag on him, but you have to meet that valuation. You have to meet that price tag. And if you can't pay for all of it in cash, which they probably can't, because no one can coming out of this, you know, economic situation, you have to make sure you include players as a part of a swap that we accept. So I think that's the situation. I think there's, you know, in my opinion, there's probably maybe a 65 to 70% chance he does go to Barcelona. I've raised that from 50%, which is where I was about a month ago. I think there's a better chance than not he goes to Barca, but I don't think Inter will really feel a whole lot of pressure to get this done until maybe next year. If he's still on the club next year and he's not signed a contract extension and he's about to enter the final year of his Inter contract, I think that's when you start to feel the pressure, because one more year and you lose him for nothing. So I don't think you've reached the point where you're feeling a whole lot of that pressure. And on that possible deal for Lautaro, a lot of people have put the name Arturo Vidal as a possibility of being, you know, a player who goes the other way from Barcelona to Inter. This is certainly a player that Antonio Conte wants, right? Coached him at Juventus. There's a reason why Vidal gets linked to Inter in every transfer window, because Conte really likes him. And I like him, but there's a couple things I don't like about the possibility of Arturo Vidal coming to Inter. Now, he may or may not be part of the Lautaro swap, or it could be done as a separate deal because apparently they're still working on contract details. Reports this week have said that Vidal is basically in constant contact with Conte. They've been talking a lot, and Vidal wants to go to Inter. You know, you can put as much stock into those reports as you want to, but that's what's being said today. And there's a number getting thrown out, Jerry, and the number getting thrown out for what Vidal wants as his wages, and keep in mind he's, I think, 33 years old. He wants 12 million euros per season. Now, let me add something to this conversation, okay? Because I've seen the reactions on social media to that 12 million euros number, which if that were net wages, that would make him the highest paid player on Inter, which seems a little ridiculous for someone his age. The number I've seen out at 12 million euros, that's the gross, not the net, which means gross before taxes. Now, in Serie A, you report players' wages as after taxes, which is about 50%. So the 12 million euros number is not really the salary number. It would be 6 million euros, which is still a lot of money, by the way. So it's still a lot, but it's not the astronomical 12 million net per season that some fans think it is. My understanding is 12 million are the gross wages, not the net wages. So I want your opinion on this as well, Jerry, because there's really a sparking debate among Interista now as to who you'd rather have next year. Arturo Vidal, who's going to be pretty expensive because you have to, you know, you have to buy him and give him a new deal. Or do you bring back Raja Nainggolan, who's on loan with Cagliari? So if you bring him back from his loan, there's no transfer fee. And I think he makes about 4 million net per season, which is considerably less than what Arturo Vidal would want. Now, if both players cost the same, I think I like Vidal a little bit more. And part of that is because that's the guy Conte wants. And I want my coach to have the players he feels fits best with his formation. And if that's Vidal, I give him the benefit of the doubt. However, once you factor in the financial aspects, if I've got to pay maybe 15 million euros for the transfer fee for Vidal, plus pay him 2 or 3 million more euros per season than the other possibility in Nainggolan, because Vidal's going to be more expensive, I don't think that difference is worth it. And I'd probably rather give Nainggolan, who tactically seems pretty damn similar to me, and you know that guy's always going to score against Juventus because he hates Juventus. I think at those prices, Jerry, I would rather have Nainggolan than Vidal.
I was just looking at their ages. They're both 32. And with Nainggolan, he's been playing in Serie A for quite a few seasons now. I think majority of his career has been in Serie A, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, so the majority of his whole career has been in Serie A. So you have a player that understands the league still, who has good familiarity. He's been around, and he's come back to form this season with Cagliari. And so you're getting a player who looks rejuvenated. Now you're getting a guy, an Arturo Vidal, who's demanding high wages, who wants an option in his third season, where he'll be 35, 36 at the time. And who knows what his condition will be like, because a lot of players at that age are not fit to play as they are years prior. So I would just maybe stick with Nainggolan in this situation. It's tough. Vidal has really struggled to stay healthy the past few seasons, and I think injuries are starting to mount on him. I don't know what to take of this move. It's hard. I think Nainggolan's he can be a good leader when his head is focused, when he's thinking the game right. The only thing is that you do provide a good point that Conte wants Arturo Vidal. So if Conte doesn't get the player he wants, then you're going to have friction with ownership and sporting director, and that's where you start to see heads start to bump each other. So I think in if you want to keep a happy manager, you got to bring Vidal in. But with Vidal, there's consequences, because you're overpaying for a player that you should not be paying that much for. And then you have Raja Nainggolan. I think correct me if I'm wrong, he probably makes less than what Arturo Vidal is demanding.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, he makes Nainggolan makes about $4 million per season after taxes, and it looks like Vidal would demand $6 million after taxes. So he's it's considerably cheaper.
And so, especially that Vidal probably won't be starting most of the games. He'll be probably coming off the bench. So that's a lot of money for a bench player.
Yeah, and no, you're right about that.
That's another thing. It's a lot of money for a bench player. Do you want to spend that much for a player on the bench? And there's a lot of outcomes here. And so I don't, like, again, I'm not a numbers guy. I don't really keep track of their contracts. I don't even know when Nainggolan's contract expires as well. So that's another thing to keep into consideration. I would assume that his contract probably ends way sooner than Vidal's would. So it all depends what they want, how they look at it. I haven't watched a lot of Vidal this season. I watched him last year and he was really good coming off the bench, being a really difference maker in their matches, and he really controls the midfield really good. So two different players. It all depends what Inter's how they want to use these players and what they plan on doing going forward in their roles. So it's tough. It really is tough. And another thing is Nainggolan and Conte, are they going to make up and be on the same level? That's another thing. And, you know, there's a little feud over there between the two. So that might be something else to consider, maybe why he probably wouldn't be back in the lineup next season. Maybe they consider just selling him and just part ways officially. So a lot of ifs and buts. But I just wouldn't spend that much money for Vidal.
No, yeah, I completely agree with that. And I'll add one more thing to the Vidal conversation. If courting Arturo Vidal comes at the expense of bringing in Sandro Tonali, I will be so fucking furious, Jerry. Like, Jerry, you will never have seen me or heard me as angry as I would be if Inter, you know, ends up kind of ending their pursuit of Tonali and just letting him go to Juve because they need to go after Arturo Vidal, a 32-year-old versus, you know, a 19-year-old who's going to be one of the best players in Serie A for maybe the next 15 years. Like, if they were to do that, there will be no end to my anger. Like, you will never know me as furious as the day when I read, you know, in Gianluca Di Marzio's Twitter feed or something that Inter has ended their pursuit of Tonali because they're going all in on Arturo Vidal. I will rage.
No, you're right. That's the biggest thing. You want to start building towards the future as well. And Tonali is the future. You got Barella, who's the future. If Sensi comes back, Stefano Sensi comes back, that's the future. And these are building blocks at Inter. It's like a little new direction maybe with Inter that we're seeing the youth coming out of this team where they're buying good young players, not so expensive. And then they're adding those more expensive players that really need to be added into the squad that will help and build something together. So I think that if you're going to buy Vidal and it costs you to get Sandro Tonali, you're 100% fucked up. Yeah, I agree with you. 100%
fucked up. I mean, sense. And by the way, that sounds like the sort of thing that Antonio Conte would want, because, you know, he doesn't care about 3 years from now. He's not going to be at Inter in 3-4 years. Like, he cares about this year and next year. So that's hopefully something that Beppe Marotta would have to talk him out of if it came to that. I did see an Italian football TV tweet from a report that Inter want, you know, both Vidal and Tonali. If you can get that done, I'd be totally good with that if they could bring in both Tonali and Vidal. It sounds like a fantasy world, but if that's the case, I'd be good with that. But if I have to choose one or the other, I'm going Sandro Tonali every single time. Last quick note on Inter. There are reports that they're closer to bringing Dries Mertens in on, you know, a Bosman deal, a free transfer, that he, you know, apparently has been asking Romelu Lukaku about where to buy houses or apartments in Milan, and that he's inching closer. I know Napoli still would hope to renew his deal and sign him to a new contract, so we'll see where that thing plays out. But I don't know, anything else, Jerry, you want to note before we bring in our special guest, Rick Huff, to talk some Hellas Verona? Looking forward to that. But any other notes on Serie A or life you want to get to? We will have a Jerry story time coming up later.
No, just curious. I hope that Mertens doesn't go to Inter. That's 100%. I just don't want him to go there. I like him in Napoli. He's a Napolitan, he's not from Napolitan, but he's a Napolitan by just playing with the club, serving them well, being there for many years. It would really hurt me to see him leave Napoli. I really enjoy the way he plays for the fans. He plays with his heart for the symbol. He really embraces the fans. He loves them, and I hope that in his heart that he sticks with Napoli, because Napoli faithful have been behind him, and he's been behind the fans for such quite a long time. That would be really tough for Napoli fans to swallow if he went to Inter personally, but it's not in stone yet. But the fact that he's calling Romelu Lukaku to ask him some advice, some questions, starts to make you think that maybe he is out the door. But it is what it is, and these things do happen in sports. So, but yeah, I'm hoping that we do see football come June 12th, June 13th. And I keep on getting the freaking dates wrong, but yeah, June 13th, I don't even know what date is anymore. We'll just go with that.
Well, you should know, because it's the 20th anniversary of the Lazio Scudetto in 2000. It's May 18th, my friend. I mean, a lot of people may be listening to this on the 19th or the 20th, but it's the 18th where we are.
Yeah, good point.
Really excited to cover a club that we've neglected. We haven't taken a deep dive yet on Hellas Verona, who's really having a fun campaign, and they played spoiler, in a tremendous week to both Lazio and Juventus. I was kind of happy to see both of those things happen, especially the victory over Juve. And Rick Huff is nice enough to join us. He is the editor of the Crazy Faithful Fanzine and the Notes from Verona blog, which is, I think, a really enjoyable blog if you guys haven't checked it out, because Rick does a fantastic job not only talking about football, but talking about life in the city of Verona. And it's been especially intriguing, I think, in recent weeks coming out of quarantine with things starting to reopen a little bit. So, Rick, thank you so much for taking the time. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Thanks very much for having me, and thanks for those kind words about my blog and my writing. I'm good. It's great to talk to you, and it's great finally to be thinking about and talking about football again. You know, as you say, it's been a strange, surreal couple of months here in Italy, so it's good to be talking about football. And I have to say as well, I love your podcast. It's made me smile. You guys are prolific, and you're experts. You know, I live here and I have a season ticket for Hellas Verona, but your knowledge of the game puts mine to shame, really.
Well, that means a lot. We appreciate that. And I appreciate what you say about missing football, because something I wanted to ask you, and obviously you certainly don't speak for everyone in the country, I'm curious about this because, you know, Jerry and I, we're outside of Italy, and many of the Calcio fans we talk to don't live in the country. So just kind of based on those you talk to and maybe the word around Verona, is do you feel like the Italian people are really ready to re-embrace Serie A, as there's talk about the games resuming next month? Or do you feel like maybe football feels insignificant to a lot of folks right now after everything the country's been through?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I can only really speak for myself. And obviously the interactions I've had here, it depends really on where in Italy you are. I think we had a message come out of Bergamo recently from the Atalanta fans, and they're not keen at all, I don't think, to get football up and running again. They've got other more pressing concerns. But here in Verona, although we're still pretty close to Lombardy, where the main epicenter of the pandemic was, you know, we're, I think, now just about ready to start getting life up and running again, albeit with the restrictions that are inevitably going to apply. Obviously, as well, there's a huge economic incentive for the football.
No worries.
There's a huge economic incentive to get football up and running. But on the other hand, I think the football purists here and in Verona, there's plenty of them, will tell you that football without the fans is nothing. And, you know, after everything that's happened, you know, it's going to be difficult. And football without fans, it's going to be strange for the players who've had, you know, a couple of months without training, let alone playing a match. How are they going to react on the pitch? So I would say at the moment it's 50-50, you know, divided between those who want it to go ahead and those that don't. And I think it's also 50-50 on whether it even will go ahead or not. I think there's still so many logistical, bureaucratic hurdles to overcome that it could go either way.
You know, Rick, I've really enjoyed your Twitter feed recently. You know, it was I can't remember the exact day, but it was when, you know, you were kind of first allowed to go outside again with some of the restrictions lifted, and you took this wonderful picture from like a balcony or on a hilltop of Verona. It was absolutely, absolutely beautiful. So after being locked down for a couple of months and recently allowed to go outside again, what has life been like in Verona for the past week or so as you're kind of allowed to resume some aspects of a normal life?
I mean, obviously, it's been fantastic to get out of the house. We've been indoors. We're lucky we've got a couple of balconies on our apartment, and we've also got a small garden that we share with our neighbors. So we have been able to get outside a little bit, and then they extended it so you could get out within a 200 meter radius of your apartment. So for a couple of weeks I was running up and down my street. Now the restrictions have really eased, so I've been on my bike. I've taken a couple of trips into the city centre. I was in the city centre today. I had my first coffee in one of the bars in one of the main piazzas, which was a takeaway coffee. The bars aren't open yet. And there's some normality, but it's still very, very, very different. There's no tourists. There's no international tourists. I would say at most 10% of the bars and restaurants are open. So most of them are still closed. And the streets are still pretty quiet. People are very cautious, I think. Everyone is wearing a mask. Everyone's trying to respect the distancing rules. But at the same time, I know the bar owners, the shop owners, they're keen to get things up and running again. And I think probably in the next week or two, we'll see the next steps in that direction.
So you have a good idea like what's going on in Italy since you actually live there. And what are your thoughts of the season possibly resuming June 13? I think that's the date that they had in mind. Correct me if I'm wrong. But do you think that with everything that's going on in Italy, starting to open up things and easing back in, and I know that there's been a lot of talk back and forth with Spadafora, and to me, it's just like broken communication at this point. Yeah. But it seems today that 99.9%, someone had mentioned that the league is going to start. Are you convinced that that the Serie A is going to resume in June, or are you a believer that the season's just done?
Well, I would say it could go either way, to be honest. I think it's still 50-50. I think you remember the shambles that preceded the lockdown. You remember games were getting cancelled, then they were being played, then there was behind closed doors, then there was last-minute cancellations. And that was the relatively easy process of closing down the football season. I think reopening the football season is going to be even more complex. And there are vested interests, and there are people who are trying to protect their interests, their economic interests. There are medical questions, ethical questions, logistical questions. And remember, this is Italy, guys. So who knows? I think in my heart of hearts, I would love to see some more football this season. But it's still a massive if. It's a massive, you know, there are still massive obstacles. So I think it could go either way, to be honest, at this point.
Now, I don't know many Hellas Verona fans, to be honest.
Yeah.
And you're probably one of the very few that I know of. So how did you start becoming a fan of Hellas Verona? And additionally, what inspired you to become a writer as well?
Okay. Well, I mean, like a lot of Brits of my generation, I grew up watching Italian football with the legendary James Richardson on Channel 4. This was a classic Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon TV program that showed a live Italian football match. There was also Italia 90. I would have been 13 at that point. So, you know, Italian football has always had a certain fascination for me. Then my wife is of Italian origins. Her parents are Italian, although she grew up in Scotland like me. And her dad and her brother are massive Calcio fans, one a fan of Inter and the other a fan of Fiorentina. So Italian football was always there. Then in 2011, we relocated from Scotland to Verona, and that, I suppose, is when I really started to take an interest in Italian football. I should say at that point, this is September 2011, and Hellas Verona were in Serie B at that point. Chievo were in Serie A, and I at that time thought, hey, I'm only going to be here for 2 years, I'm going to go and watch the Serie A club, which was Chievo. And that was a big mistake, because Chievo, you know, you turn up at the Bentegodi for a Chievo game and there's nobody there. The bars are empty. The stadium's half empty. There's no atmosphere around the stadium. I actually thought I'd made a mistake with the kickoff time or something when I turned up for that first game. But then a few friends suggested I should go and see Hellas Verona in Serie B. And that was just a completely different experience. Massive Corva, massive vocal fans, pubs and bars all really busy before the match, and just a completely different atmosphere. And they also had a bit of momentum behind them at that time, having come up through the lower divisions. So that's when I really started to follow Hellas Verona around about the 2012-13 and 13-14 season, just as they were returning to Serie A after a long absence. And then your second question was about writing. Well, I guess it's a kind of classic thing to do if you relocate to Italy. I had plenty of time on my hands back then, and I started just to write about some of the experiences and stories and history that I learned as I was exploring the city of Verona. And so that started off with my blog, Notes from Verona, which I continue to maintain to this day. And then as I get more and more involved in the football side of things, I started to write occasional articles about the football team. And then at a certain point, someone suggested I actually launch a podcast about Hellas Verona, Hellas Verona podcast. And I just thought, no, that sounds like too much trouble, too much hard work. But I would be quite up for doing a fanzine. And I love the old school style fanzines, the hard copies that you pick up before the match. And that's when I decided to launch the fanzine, The Crazy Faithful.
So I want to take a deep dive into Hellas Verona season, and it's one of the most surprising stories this season with how they've been playing. So what do you believe has made Verona much more successful this time around compared to the last time they were promoted back to the top flight?
Yeah, one word, Juric. And yeah, I think he's made all the difference.
He's awesome.
Ivan Juric, yeah, he's just done such a fantastic job here at Hellas Verona. He's a great communicator. He's got a clear footballing philosophy. And, you know, you said it was one of the great surprises of the season. For us as well, to be honest, it's been an incredible surprise this season, because the last time we were in Serie A, which, you know, was just a couple of years ago, we were at the foot of the league for the entire season, and it was a terrible, terrible season, a terrible squad playing terrible football. And the atmosphere inside the stadium was just toxic. Fans turned on the players, they turned on the management, and they turned on the president of the club. Whereas now that has just completely turned around. And, you know, it's, in some ways it's difficult to explain why, because Juric came in and I was like, okay, fine. Wouldn't have been my first choice, but let's give him a chance. And then some of the players that came in over the season, they didn't exactly capture the imagination. And we just thought, here we go again. It's going to be another dogfight at the bottom of the table. And, you know, that was our expectations for the season. The objective was salvation. But Juric has just taken this group of players and turned them into something really pretty incredible by Hellas Verona standards. And I think that's his philosophy, his personality. These players have all got something to prove, whether they're youngsters in the squad for the first time or more experienced players who are getting their last chance really to show what they can do. But he just seems to have motivated them, organised them. And, you know, it's just been a joy, actually. The atmosphere around the stadium has completely changed. It's been brilliant.
No, totally. And speaking on Ivan Juric, who I agree has done an incredible, incredible job, do you think he could end up being, you know, a relatively long-term manager there at Verona, or are you guys starting to maybe worry about losing him soon?
I really hope so. But you know as well as I do what the situation is in Serie A and the manager merry-go-round that exists. You know, at the moment, he's the main man. He's the top guy. He's making all the right decisions at Verona. And, you know, the fans love him. The results are brilliant. So, of course, we hope he stays. I'm sure, I don't know why, this is my instinct, but I'm sure he'll stay and do another season. I think he probably considers this a work in progress, and no matter what happens to this season, I think there will be unfinished business that he'll want to take care of at Hellas Verona next season. So I really hope he stays on. Because I mean, even if the season somehow does finish this year, it's not how anybody would have wanted it. And hopefully next season we can get back to a full proper season how it should be. And he'll be able to pick up where he left off.
You know, and Rick, if this season does, in fact, resume next month, it should be very interesting to watch Verona. I mean, currently eighth in the table with 35 points and only 4 points out of the final Europa League spot. I mean, do you allow yourself to dream a little bit that Verona can contend with the likes of, you know, the Romas, the Napolis, the Milans, all of which have had certainly their issues this season, to try and get one of those Europa League spots?
Yes. I think in those euphoric moments after the final whistle, when you go for your first pint in the pub across the road from the stadium, you know, you do hear the word Europe, Europa, kind of whispered and muttered and exclaimed. So, yes, I think that's inevitable that we're going to, instead of looking downwards, to look upwards towards the European places. Verona have been here before quite recently, the 13-14 season, I think it was, where we ended up finishing 10th. It was Luca Toni was banging in goals for fun. And at one point in that season, Europe seemed like it could be a possibility. But, I mean, European football for a club like Hellas Verona would just be absolutely incredible. You know, the last time that happened was probably, you know, 20 or 30 years ago at least. So, yes, everybody is hoping But we also have to be realistic. You know, there's Milan and Napoli ahead of us. We've got some tough games to come. But if we pick up where we left off, then anything is possible. You know, we've got Lazio at home. We've got Atalanta at home. We've got Inter at home. And I would say with a full Bentegodi, we would have half a chance. Unfortunately, the Bentegodi is going to be empty. So it'll be up to the players. It'll be up to the manager. So we'll just have to wait and see. But Europe would be fantastic.
No, that's a very good point. And so there has been a lot of rumor talk involving defender Marash Kambula. And some of the teams that have been rumored to show interest in the defender have been Napoli and Inter Milan.
Yeah.
Which club do you think Kambula will be at next season?
Well, I hope he'll be at Hellas Verona next season, Jerry. I really do.
Fair enough.
Because he's been fantastic. And you have to remember, he's just a kid. This is his first season of senior football. So he's come into the team. Juric gave him his chance at the very start of the season against Bologna. And he missed it a few games with injury in about January, I think. But he's been an integral part of Verona's solid defence this season. And you know, it has been a very decent defensive performance by Verona this season. You know, we've conceded only, you know, 25 or 26 goals, I think, and he's just been at the heart of that. And so for such a young guy, his maturity, determination, and he loves to get forward as well. You know, he'll go and attack for the corners. You'll see him busting a gut to get up into a counter-attack. So I really, really hope he stays at Hellas Verona. If he has to go, and you've identified Napoli and Inter, I think English clubs have also been tracking him. I heard Liverpool and Chelsea were monitoring his situation. But if I had to choose between Inter and Napoli, I would probably choose Inter, just because we've already lost one of our defenders, Rachmani, to Napoli, and I think that would be a bit too generous if we gave both of them to Napoli.
Yeah, that's true. And I remember at one point around January, it looked like at least, you know, media reports are sometimes just rubbish and you don't realize it till after the fact. But at one point, it looked like they were both going to Napoli, which I thought was pretty impressive. I mean, from Napoli's standpoint, to poach both guys.
Yeah. No, I think that, I mean, even local media over here was reporting similar things. And there's no doubt that he's had talks. If I remember correctly, I think his agent has had talks with Inter as well. So there's no doubt there are, and there have been discussions that have taken place. And the reality is, you know, he's come up through the Hellas Verona academy system. He's been playing for Hellas Verona since he was 8 years old. His family lives on the lake at Peschiera. But, you know, if a 20 million euro offer came in for him, you know, there's no question, I don't think that Verona would cash in on that. And who can blame them in the current economic climate?
Yeah, no, very, very true. And, you know, Rick, I wanted to, before we wrap it up, I wanted to go back to, you know, when you were telling your story about, you know, moving over to Verona from Scotland. I'm curious because, I mean, obviously it's always a big step, you know, to move to another country and another culture. Like, well, what are some of the big cultural differences between life in Verona versus life back in Scotland?
Wow, that's a good question as well. I suppose, I mean, the obvious thing, the obvious difference between the two places is the climate. And Verona has just got the most wonderful climate, you know. Cold, actually quite cold in the winters, but long, hot, warm summers. And that opens up everything else. You know, that means you can go for a weekend to the lake. You can take an Aperol spritz in the piazza. You know, you can go for a lovely passeggiata in the city. You can play sports all day on a Saturday. Whereas, you know, Scotland, obviously slightly different climate, slightly different way of life, centred around the pub, probably. And that's probably the thing I miss most about living in Italy. Although there are plenty of bars, a good Scottish pub They're pretty few and far between, although I have to say I have found a couple.
Well done. Oh,
and there
man.
Are some good ones. Obviously, there's things like there's language and there's bureaucracy and there's... But, you know, we were ready for a new challenge. When we came over here, we were ready for a new way of life and a new challenge and a new adventure. And, the quality of life over here is great. And the football, you know, is... Football for me has been probably the best way of exploring and getting into the local culture, because through football you meet people, through football you can go to different places, you can, you know, it's just such an important part of the culture over here that, you know, it's, you know, yeah, you know, it's just, yes, yeah, I don't know quite how to conclude that sentence, but yeah, yeah. Football, beer, and sunshine.
Well, very well said, Rick, all of it. We appreciate the perspective on not only on the club, but on the city. I think it's really cool to be able to chat about all that. So, and I'm happy that you can spend a little bit more time outdoors now. So thank you so much for taking the time. And I recommend everyone, to follow his Notes from Verona blog, which is excellent, and the Crazy Faithful fanzine. Rick, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And hopefully towards the end of the season, we can speak again and discuss Verona's forthcoming European adventure.
Well said. And make sure you follow him on Twitter at Rick_Huff. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks.
Really good stuff there from Rick Huff. We really liked taking a deep dive on Verona. We hadn't done that yet. I'm sure we'll bring Rick on again once the season resumes. God willing, it does resume. But we've reached everyone's favorite part of the show. I still can't believe how many stories this guy has. I want to get the TV show greenlit, the R-rated Wonder Years. It's time for story time with Jerry. Jerry, what do we have on tap for this one?
Oh, this is a really good story. It's basically I went to a nightclub. It was a Saturday night, and I got hammered at my buddy's house. It was like a bunch of us. It was like maybe 15 of us, and we went to this nightclub called Metro. And for those who are from Toronto that listen to this podcast, you probably will remember Metro was back in the day, and they were really strict with dress code. And before I even got to the club, I had drank way too much beers. I had beers, I had probably some vodka, who knows what I had that night, but I drank a lot. And we take a cab downtown, we get out of the cab, and then all of a sudden I need to get to the washroom, but there's a lineup outside. Secondly, aside from the lineup, I don't even think we got to the lineup personally, to correct myself there. We were still walking there, and I had to piss my pants so bad. It was bad. And now you got people, it's crowded at night, it's around 9:30 at night, and the streets are jammed. Women are walking back and forth looking hot. You got men all dressed up ready to pick up women that night at a nightclub, because there's just clubs everywhere. And all of a sudden I say, fuck it, I'm hammered. I go to the side and people can see me. I pull down my pants and I'm taking, not fully, but you know what I mean, but I'm taking the long ass piss, at least a minute long, side of the stream. People are just walking by and they're just watching me taking a leak, and they're just like, what the fuck is going on here? And like I'm just gone, hammered. And all of a sudden in the street you can see a cop drive right by and is looking to give me a ticket. He sees what I'm doing and he's trying to like pull over, but the thing is there's so many cars and ongoing traffic that he has nowhere to pull over. And as I recall, he's trying to turn around to stop me, but as I'm done, I proceed and I keep going, and I go into the nightclub and I just run away. I'm like, fuck this shit, I don't need this. But I just remember this woman, and it's just I'm just like releasing it, not even giving shit that women are watching me, men are watching. I don't give a fuck. I'm hammered. And my buddies are like, what the fuck are you doing, man? And then we get to the club. And the worst part was, I'm in the club. I get in. And I look down. I'm sitting down. And I'm like, fuck, I go, I got running shoes on. I got white shoes blended in with my, like, shirt and everything. And my buddies know how I'm always freaking bringing running shoes to the club. And I had to hide the whole night, make sure no bouncers saw me with running shoes on because like they were strict with dress code. So the whole night I had to like cover myself and like, it was funny how I didn't even know that I went to the nightclub with the wrong shoes. And that's the best thing about me is that I always dress up and there's always a fuck up with me. It could be my pants.
I'm very much the same way, by the way. Be very much the same way.
Could be that I'll have a stain on my shirt half the time. I'll be saucy.
Or a lot of times, Jerry, I will leave the house with a nice shirt. And then as soon as like the first time I put any food in my mouth, all over the shirt, stain appear. Like I am so messy when I eat.
Oh, man. But that night was crazy. I didn't get home till 5 a.m. I had to go to work for 6.
Oh, that's yeah. Rough.
I used to go to nightclubs until 5 a.m, go to work, go to bed for an hour or two. And I would walk to work. Half an hour just to walk it off. Yeah. I was way very energetic back in the day where I was able to work like 12 hours a day, go to a nightclub and like just party and never sleep. Now, forget it. Now it's such a struggle now to even get up and get to work.
Dude, so when you were younger, you were like the Raja Nainggolan of like the working world, right? Because he would often go out to the nightclubs and then drive right to training, like from the nightclubs, wouldn't sleep, would drive right to either the Roma facility or the Inter facility recently. And so you were like that, but you were like the blue collar Nainggolan.
How the fuck can he run, man?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I used to smoke, okay? And people know who know who I am. Like, I'm not an actual smoker, though. Like, I will buy cigarettes, and I would say 90% of the pack will be distributed among people. And I was more of a social smoker. Right. But I remember after 2 weeks, I couldn't even breathe. And like, I would go to hockey and have a cigarette, and I'd be like, how the fuck did people smoke, go to ball hockey, run a whole game, and like not be able to collapse on the floor? But I didn't mind going to a stag, and stag is like more for like men who are the guy who's getting married, and basically he has like a party and it's all his buddies, and I would have like a cigarette and a beer, and I didn't mind it. But now I don't even want to touch a cigarette anymore. It just tastes disgusting. Now that I always look back and say, well, how did I even start smoking? But yeah, that night turned out good, man. But I just remember my buddy, it was like 3 a.m. This guy I was with, he was so hammered. He was punching out like street lights, like these lamps. And like he busted his hand open. It got really, really bad that night, man. Yeah, I think that every time I've gone somewhere, someone or something either gets hurt or hurts someone. It just like it always turns into something. But yeah, it ended up being a good night though.
I love that.
I didn't get kicked out, so that was good.
Yeah, so it all ended. It ended victoriously. That was really good stuff, man. Jerry, I always appreciate you and the stories. We really appreciate Rick Huff for joining us. You want to follow Jerry on Twitter at jmancini8. You want to follow me on Twitter at Alex Dono. And make sure you follow the show at CalchoConPod on Twitter at CalchoConPod. And we really appreciate everyone listening to this. And if you could do us a huge favor, if you enjoy this podcast, leave us a 5-star rating because it really helps. We've gotten a few new 5-star ratings recently. We really appreciate it. I'm not sure if it works on every service, but I know on Apple Podcasts, you can just hit the 5 stars. It takes half a second. It really helps us out. And if you do have a couple minutes, leave us a review. That's a really nice gesture as well. So we will talk to everyone next time on the Calcio Connection podcast. Ciao.